Okay, we'll do a quick overview of kashering things. Not every material is kasherable. Meaning, you have earthenware, which you cannot kasher. And sometimes some items have serrated edges, like a knife with a serrated edge, where food gets caught. Sometimes an item needs to be kashered by putting it into either boiling water or into the fire, and it has a handle which will melt in the fire. Sometimes an item can only be kashered by putting it to a blowtorch, and it will be destroyed by a blowtorch, such as frying pans. We'll do a quick overview of how things absorb and how they have to be kashered, and then we'll understand a little bit the limitations we have. Let's begin with one concept before we speak about kashering things. And that is the question which you asked, is there a difference between Pesach and non-Pesach? So we have the following distinction in Talmud, actually, between Hetera Bala or Isura Bala. We say that anytime you heat up a food in a vessel, so it absorbs of the flavor. Once it reaches a certain heat, the vessel absorbs flavor from the food. So there's a difference between when the vessel absorbed Hetera, food that's kosher, or Isura, it absorbs things that are non-kosher. Let's take, we'll get back to that. We'll revisit that in a little bit. Okay? So, the first thing we have to know is that after an item absorbs flavor, so then for 24 hours it emits a positive flavor, positive form of that flavor. After me'es le'es, after 24 hours, so then the flavor turns bad inside the vessel. And when the vessel will emit that flavor, technically it's emitting a bad flavor. But being that the flavor was absorbed as a positive flavor, okay, so then when it's polate, when it gives off the flavor, even though it's no sing tam lifgam, it gives a flavor that's harmful, nonetheless, it's prohibited rabbinically. So if we didn't have this rule, if we only went biblically, so then you could buy a pot from a nanchu, wait 24 hours and use it. Even though 24 hours ago he used it for pork, you clean it out well. And after 24 hours, the flavor that the pot will emit is a negative flavor. And then biblically that's not prohibited. The rabbis prohibited it. The rabbis said you have to purge the flavor before you use the vessel. So far so good. So whenever we kasher vessels, we prefer to wait 24 hours before we kasher them. Because after 24 hours, the flavor is already a negative flavor that makes it easier to kasher them. That's step one. Step two, before we go to step one, let's go to step 1b. What exception do we have to that? Here you have lemons, onion, garlic. When you have something that has a sharp flavor, so then we have an exception to two rules. Number one, we just said that the flavor that something emits after 24 hours is negative. Well, something with a sharp flavor can take out a flavor which is positive from that same vessel. That's number one. And number two is we generally say that items do not emit flavor unless there's heat involved. Unless you're cooking, you're roasting, there has to be a heat involved. When it comes to something sharp, then we say it can draw out flavor even if there's nothing hot present. If you have duchka de sakina, if you have the pressure of a knife, you're going to slice a lemon with a knife. So then we say that the pressure of the knife on something sharp will draw out the flavor and draw out a positive flavor. Even though more than 24 hours passed and even though everything's cold, something sharp draws out flavor and draws out positive flavor. So I got a phone call the other day. A guy, his parents were visiting, and they rented out a place in the north or the south, somewhere they were going out. They wanted to take him and his family out on vacation. And the person who rented out the house told him everything's kosher. Great. They come to the place, and they see from the guy's books and the fact that the guy has no mezuzahs, and everything indicates that the guy does not keep kosher, even though he said he does. So they knocked on some neighbors' doors, and the neighbors said, no, the guy's really not religious. I mean, it's not nice that he told you he's going to keep that he runs a kosher house, but he doesn't lead an observant lifestyle. I mean, no one can know what he's really doing in his kitchen, but there's no reason to assume that in this area he's observant. Maybe yes, maybe no. So the guy calls up and asks, what can he use of the vessels in the house, right? So issue one of his issues was that he had already cut an onion with the person's knife. So I told him, you can't use that onion. Go buy a new onion, because the onion takes out the flavor. If you have reason to suspect, based on what you're hearing from the neighbors, this guy doesn't keep kosher, so then his vessels aren't kosher. So then that onion, even b'dieved, is not kosher, because it drew out flavor, which is not kosher, from the knife. Okay? So that's part A, B. Okay? Now let's go on to step two. Step two is the rule, kebole'o kach polito. The way that an item absorbs flavor is the way it will emit flavor. Now, this breaks down a little bit differently than we would expect. It breaks down that we have different forms of heat. I'll get to you in 1 second, Daniel. If you have dry heat, such as baking, roasting, that's dry heat, right? They're all the same, baking and roasting, it would be the same. So that's one type of heat. So let's say you have an oven and you bake challah in that oven, or people sometimes don't realize this, they bake bread in an oven and they only take off challah later. Well, then that dough that was baking on the cooking sheet was tevel. It's not kosher yet till you take off challah. And technically the cooking sheet absorbed from that dough. And baking paper doesn't help us in this area. It absorbs through the baking paper. So, kibboleo kach poleto means the same type of heat that caused the flavor to be absorbed is the type of heat you need to take out the flavor. So, if it was dry heat, if you bake something or you roast, you need to heat that up. How much do you need to heat it up? So, right now we'll say you need to heat it up till sparks are flying out of it, okay? Till it's red hot. So, our metals don't really give off sparks, but till it's that hot. So where do we have that? Let's say cooking sheets. You know, you have an oven and you bake in that oven. Let's say you buy a used oven. So people sometimes think you could kosher an oven doing all kinds of interesting things. Well, they're forgetting that the trays, the baking trays, they have absorbed through direct dry heat. And they need to be koshered with a blowtorch. And almost always they will not withstand the heat of a blowtorch. Meaning their lining, their enamel lining will melt under the heat of a blowtorch. So even if you could kosher the rest of the oven, which maybe we'll discuss today, you could not really kosher those baking pans. Where do we have an exception to that? Self-cleaning ovens would be an exception, because self-cleaning ovens are built in a way that they can withstand tremendous heat. And when you turn on the self-cleaning oven to the self-cleaning cycle, so then it goes up to that tremendous heat, which is what we call libun chamur, a very heavy heat that technically is would cause sparks to fly. Okay, so that's where we run into that. We will revisit this in a little bit. Give me 1 second, sorry. So our first example is with regard to baking or roasting. So if I were to buy a grill from a non-Jew, so the grate of that grill has absorbed through dry heat non-kosher food, I would have to bring it up to that tremendous heat called libun chomor in order to kasher it. Now, libun works differently than the other forms of kashering. The way libun works is that the heat is so high that it burns the flavor inside. It's not that the flavor comes out. It's that the heat is so high that any flavor that was inside the vessel gets burnt. Okay? Okay, step two. I buy a pot. So I'm buying a pot from a non-Jew. I have to assume he cooked in that pot non-kosher food, non-kosher chicken, you know, A and B chicken. So now I have to kosher that pot. How did the pot absorb flavor? Through liquid, through cooking, right? So kibole'o kach poleto, just as it absorbs, it gives out. The only problem is that every so often, the pot overflows. So how do I do that? How do I kosher it? If I'm going to bring it to a tremendous heat and have it overflow, it's not going to work. So what we usually do is we put that pot inside a bigger pot. We usually put it inside a big vat. Now, Erev Pesach, all around, they have these big vats of boiling hot water. And literally, they have fire in them, and they're boiling. And you put in the pot into a bigger vat, and then it emits the flavor into that bigger pot because it's very hard to get the rim, and very often it overflows. There are other solutions, but this is the one we generally use.
Well, then shouldn't you change the water every time you put a pot into the bigger pot? Because it overflows the water.
Well, think how much flavor can be in the walls of a pot. Not more than the size of the walls, right? So that flavor gets lost in the water. Mm-hmm. You're right that after a certain number of pots, you have to change the water. That's correct.
Mm-hmm. What about if the pot has a plastic handle?
Then you run into problems, right? Some plastic handles won't withstand the heat. Mm-hmm. Right? The lids of pots are the same thing. They also have to be. What about a spoon? So a spoon, assuming it's a spoon that can be cleaned, you know, sometimes you have spoons that cannot be cleaned, but if it can be cleaned, so it depends. If it's a spoon that you only use in a klisheni, so klisheni, but if it's a spoon that you use to mix in a pot, so that's klirishon. What about a frying pan? So a frying pan is tricky, because on the one hand there's a little bit of liquid, on the other hand there isn't a lot of liquid. So sometimes when you fry, there's dry heat. Sometimes it's literally baking. So we generally say that in order to kosher a frying pan, if you buy a frying pan from a non-Jew, you have to bring that frying pan to a heat that most frying pans won't withstand, especially if they're Teflon-coated, and usually their handles are made of plastic or rubber. So it's very difficult and almost impossible to kosher a Teflon pot, Teflon frying pan. Another example of this is what they call a George Foreman or a sandwich maker, right? In Israel, by the way, they call those toasters. What we call a sandwich maker in Israel, they call a toaster.
What do they call a toaster?
I don't know what they call a toaster. Maybe they call it a matznim. A matznim is something that makes toasted bread. Someone had a sandwich maker, and they had a guest who thought it was a George Foreman, or vice versa. So the sandwich maker is really milchik, because you have milk that hits the heating element. I'm saying that the heating element that you put the bread on is really hot, and the cheese drips on it. And now someone put in something fleishik. So that can't really be kashered, because you cannot bring it to heat that'll kasher it. Now I want to go back to the first thing we discussed, when something is absorbed through dry heat. So we said you have to do libun. So here we have a distinction. This is where the issue comes up. Is it heterabala or isurabala? Did it absorb something permissible or prohibited? When something is heterabala, let's say I have a fleishik, I have a meat cooking sheet, okay? Or I have a cooking sheet that's chametz. So then many opinions will say that chametz before Pesach is called heterabala, it's a machlokes. But we have the following leniency. When something absorbed permissible food, it didn't absorb pork, absorbed something permissible. So then we say that you can bring it to libun kal, to a light form of libun. What's libun kal? That's enough that if you would put, the example of the Talmud is if you'd put a piece of hay on it, it would get burnt. In our days, what you can do is you put a baking paper on it. And when the baking paper turns black, so you know, that's the equivalent, right? It turned the baking paper black. So very often, if you have something that's heterabala, that absorbs things that are permissible, it's enough to do that. Another example of that would be, let's say you have pots at home, and you don't have a way of koshering them. You don't have a way of bringing them to you don't have a big vat. So remember, libun is more stringent than hagala. Hagala is when I put it in a pot and it cooks. What you could do, you just might ruin your pot, so you have to make sure you know what you're doing here. But what you could do theoretically is put the pot on the fire and put baking paper on the top rim of the pot. When the top rim of the pot gets so hot, now this is dry heat, right? So some pots will burn and get destroyed under this heat. Other pots, or one way you might be able to do it is heat up water till it boils out. And then you're going over to dry heat, but the pot is already very hot without burning it, right? So you put a small layer of water on the bottom. You heat up that water, so you didn't burn your pot yet. When that water all boils out, you put baking paper on top, and if that baking paper turns black, so what you've effectively done is libun kal on that pot, right? Because you've brought it to that heat. So the details are a little bit intricate, when you can do libun kal, when you need libun chomer, but in general, the rule is hetera mala, if it absorbed something permissible, so then libun kal is enough. If isura bala, if it absorbed something prohibited through dry heat, so then you need libun chomer. You need the more stringent form of libun. Now we go over to our ovens. So we discuss the baking sheet of the oven. What about the rest of the oven? So ovens are made of different materials. Many ovens in Israel have what's called in Hebrew emayel, which is what I think we call in English enamel, that coating. So we're not certain about that coating, whether that coating is earthenware, because it's similar to earthenware, or is it glass? Can it emit the flavor? So there are different opinions among the halachic authorities about if you can kosher our standard ovens. You have the question of the walls, and you have the question of the front panel, which is the door. And if you can, how should you kosher them? The opinions range. Some will say just turn it on its highest heating, on its highest heat for a half hour after it's reached its highest heat. And others will say you cannot kosher it, and still others will say put in a pan with water, a cooking sheet, let's say, with water, and let it absorb and fill up the, because the walls absorb through steam, so they'll emit the flavor through steam. So the first question is, how do we treat enamel? What are the walls of the oven made out of? That's the first question. And then the second question is, if they're enamel, can you kosher them and how, etc. So there are different opinions, and each person should go, there are halachic authorities as to whether they can kosher them or not. Generally, for chuzrim b'tshuva, it's very important to be lenient, not go with the most stringent opinion. On the contrary, find the leniency. Later on in life, you'll build your own homes, you won't be at your parents' home or whatever. That's a different question. You'll revisit the question, and then it's recommended you should buy a Pesach oven, etc. What about the stovetop, the grate? So the correct thing to do with the stovetop is clean it off completely and then take the grate and line it twice with silver foil. After you've cleaned it well, so you should do two things. Clean it well and then turn on all the flames so that whatever flavor can be burnt will be burnt. Wait for it to cool off and then wrap it twice with silver foil, and then technically you're not using the grate. What about plata, if you have a plata at home? So the two leniencies I just said, the one about the grate and the one about a plata, when you guys will be married, or for those listeners who have their own home, ask your local Orthodox rabbi. I'm not sure I would recommend this leniency. But for you guys who are at your parents' homes, if you have a plata, clean off the plata well, turn it on, and then after it's been on for, let's say, half hour, 45 minutes, let it cool off, and line it with fresh silver foil. These are leniencies which I don't like, but I think that for a chozer b'tshuva, you have to make things easier right now when they're at their parents' home. When you'll have your own homes, so then you'll buy a new plata for Pesach, you'll have a separate stovetop for Pesach, etc.
What's a plata?
A plata is a hot plate. Hot plate. For Shabbos, like Well, a blech is the piece of metal that you put over the fire. A plata is an electric hot plate. They have these square, big hot plates here in Israel. So if necessary, you could do that. Make sure your tin foil is a good quality, and so that it's not flammable. And make sure the tin foil doesn't come down over the wires and the electric component of the hot plate, because they could cause the whole hot plate to melt, and that could be very dangerous. So when you line it, you have to be careful how you line it. There are more stringent opinions than what I said, and personally, if congregants, if members of my own congregation call, I am not this lenient, but I don't think it is correct for you guys right now to take on the more stringent opinions. You can rely on this, and Be'ezrat Hashem, again, when you build your own homes, you'll revisit these questions.
Are there organizations in Chutz-Lars that